reading and not repeating the story of Muhammad, I am touched and I respond from my genius. Something has begun. But in touching, you are also touched. Something has begun between us. Our relationship has opened forward dramatically. Since this drama emerged from the telling of the story of Muhammad, our story resonates with Muhammad's and Muhammad's with ours. As myths are told and continue to resound in the telling, they come to us already richly resonant. The stories they are sound deeply with the stories of their telling. Their strength as stories lies in their ability to invite us into their drama. It is a drama that contains an entire history of voices, sounding and resounding from 1,000 sources in our culture. For this reason, myths are significantly unresolved, but unresolved in the way of an infinite game, having rules or narrative structure that allow any number of participants at any time to enter the drama without fixing its plot or bringing it to closure in a final scene. In such stories, much will be said about closure or death, but their telling will always disclose the way death comes in the course of play, and not at its end. 97. Myths of irrepressible resonance have lost all trace of an author. Even when sacred texts are written down by an identifiable prophet or evangelist, it is invariably thought that these words were first spoken to their recorders and not spoken by them. Moses received the law and did not compose it. Muhammad heard the Quran and did not dictate it. Christians do not read Mark but the gospel according to Mark. Hindus understand the most authoritative texts, the Vedas, to be heard, Sruti, and the literature that derives from the Vedas to be composed, Smriti. The gospel can be heard nowhere except from those who themselves have heard it. Although I might hear New York in your voice, there is no possibility I could hear New York by itself. No myth, therefore, exists by itself. Neither does it have a discoverable origin. Whom could we name as the first New Yorker? Even when it is God who is heard by the prophet, it is a God who speaks in the language and idiom of the prophet, and not in locutions restricted to divine utterance, as though that God's speaking were itself a form of listening. Indeed, myth is the highest form of our listening to each other, of offering a silence that makes the speech of the other possible. This is why listening is far more valued by religion than speaking. Fides ex auditu. Faith comes by listening, Paul said. 98. The opposite of resonance is amplification. A choir is the unified expression of voices resonating with each other. A loudspeaker is the amplification of a single voice, excluding all others. A bell resonates. A cannon amplifies. We listen to the bell. We are silenced by the cannon. When a single voice is sufficiently amplified, it becomes a speaking that makes it impossible for any other voices to be heard. We do not listen to a loudspeaker for what is being said, but only because it is all that is being said. Magisterial speech is amplified speech. It is speech that silences. Loudspeaking is a mode of command, and therefore a speech designed to bring itself to an end as completely and swiftly as possible. The amplified voice seeks obedient action on the part of its hearers and an immediate end to their speech. There is no possibility of conversation with a loudspeaker. Ideology is the amplification of myth. It is the assumption that since the beginning and end of history are known, there is nothing more to say. History is therefore to be obediently lived out according to the ideology. Just as the war makers of Europe regularly melted down the bells to recast them into canon, the metaphysicians have found the meaning of their myths and announced those meanings without their narrative resonance. The myths themselves are now regarded as falsehoods or curiosities and are therefore to be disregarded, if not forbidden. What ideologists are concerned to hide is the choral nature of history. The sense that it is a symphony of very different, even opposed, voices, each nonetheless making the other possible. 99. If it is true that myth provokes explanation, then it is also true that explanation's ultimate design is to eliminate myth. It is not just that the availability of bells in churches and town halls of Europe makes it possible to forge new canon. It is that the canon are forged in order to silence the bells. This is the contradiction of finite play in its highest form. To play in such a way that all need for play is erased. The loudspeaker, successfully muting all other voices and therefore all possibility of conversation, is not listened to at all. And for that reason loses its own voice and becomes mere noise. Whenever we succeed in being the only speaker, there is no speaker at all. Julius Caesar originally sought power in Rome because he loved to play the very dangerous style of politics common to the Republic. But he played the game so well that he destroyed all his opponents, making it impossible for him to find genuinely dangerous combat. He was unable to do the very thing for which he sought power. His word was now irresistible, and for that reason he could speak with no one, and his isolation was complete. We might almost say this man was looking for an assassination. Sime. If we are to say that all explanation is meant to silence myth itself, then it will follow that whenever we find people deeply committed to explanation and ideology, whenever play takes on the seriousness of warfare, we will find persons troubled by myths they cannot forget they have forgotten. The myths that cannot be forgotten are those so resonant with the paradox of silence, they become the source of our thinking, even our culture and our civilization. These are the myths we can easily discover and name, but whose meanings continually elude us. Myths whose conversion to truth never quite fills the bells of their resonance with the sand of metaphysical interpretation. These are often exceedingly simple stories. Abraham is an example. Although only two children were born to Abraham in his long life, and one of those was illegitimate, he was promised that his descendants would be as numberless as the stars of the heavens. All three of the West's major religions consider themselves children of Abraham, though each has often understood to be itself the only and final family of the patriarch, an understanding always threatened by the resounding phrase, numbered as the stars of the heavens. This is the myth of a future that always has a future. There is no closure in it. It is a myth of horizon. The myth of the Buddha's enlightenment has the same paradox in it, the same provocation to explanation, but with as little possibility of settling the matter. It is the story of a mere mortal, completely without divine aid, undertaking successfully a spiritual quest for release from all forms of bondage, including the need to report this release to others. The perfect unspeakability of this event has given rise to an immense flow of literature in scores of languages that shows no signs of abating. Perhaps the Christian myth has been the narrative most disturbing to the ideological mind. It is, like those of Abraham and the Buddha, a very simple tale. That of a God who listens by becoming one of us. It is a God emptied of divinity, who gave up all privilege of commanding speech and dwelt among us. Coming not to be served, but to serve, being all things to all persons. But the worlds to which he came received him not. They no doubt preferred a god of magisterial utterance, a commanding idol, a theatrical likeness of their own finite designs. They did not expect an infinite listener who joyously took their unlikeness on himself, giving them their own voice through the silence of wonder. A healing and holy metaphor that leaves everything still to be said. Those Christians who deafened themselves to the resonance of their own myth have driven their killing machines through the garden of history. But they did not kill the myth. The emptied divinity whom they have made into an instrument of vengeance continues to return as the man of sorrows, bringing with him his unfinished story and restoring the voices of the silenced. 100. The myth of Jesus is exemplary, but not necessary. No myth is necessary. There is no story that must be told. Stories do not have a truth that someone needs to reveal or someone needs to hear. It is part of the myth of Jesus that it makes itself unnecessary. It is a narrative of the word becoming flesh, of language entering history. A narrative of the word becoming flesh and dying, of history entering language. Who listens to his myth cannot rise above history to utter timeless truths about it. It is not necessary for infinite players to be Christians. Indeed, it is not possible for them to be Christians, seriously. Neither is it possible for them to be Buddhists, or Muslims, or atheists, or New Yorkers, seriously. All such titles can only be playful abstractions, mere performances for the sake of laughter. Infinite players are not serious actors in any story, but the joyful poets of a story that continues to originate what they cannot finish. 101. There is but one infinite game. Finite and Infinite Games, A Vision of Life as Play and Possibility, was written by James P. Carse and read by Jonathan Todd Ross. Editing and post-production by Ryan Lissy. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.